Welcome to Managing Uncertainty, a podcast series from the experts at BrightPath discussing global risk, business continuity, and crisis management. Will you be ready to lead your organization through its critical moment?
Hello and welcome to the Managing Uncertainty podcast. This is Brian Strauser, Principal and Chief Executive here at BrightPath.
This is Bray Wheeler, Consultant at BrightPath.
And I'm sure this is going to engender a whole ton of comments, but I want to confess that I am a New England Patriots fan.
I, too, am also a New England Patriots fan.
And I feel like I can come to this claim legitimately. I lived in New England from 1998 to 2005, and I've remained loyal to the Patriots, Celtics, Bruins, and Red Sox ever since then, despite living in Minnesota and being married to a Minnesota native who is not a fan of any of those teams.
No. It can't be true.
It is true.
I, however, am, while born, raised, to my mother's chagrin, from Minnesota, in terms of my allegiances. She wishes I was more of a Minnesota fan. I come by it by blood. My dad grew up out there, so, and I still have half my family still lives out in that area, so I come to it by blood, organically. Mm-hmm. But the reason we're bringing that up is
we want to talk about how the New England Patriots relate to building a team of rock stars, essentially. They were kind of the example that was on our mind as Bray and I were talking about this topic this morning as we were finalizing what we're going to talk about for the podcast. But the focus of today's show is about really recruiting the best possible talent and building that into an effective team of rock stars. And having watched the New England Patriots just simply demolish the New York Jets last night. Yeah. I think that this is a topic that was on our mind.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I think one of the things that we had kind of talked about too, and we've talked about, you know, in the past offline, is really around their ability to take players of all sorts of caliber and insert them into the right positions to succeed or find what it is that they're really good at or something that people are overlooking and being able to insert it into their culture, their process, and get the most out of them to the team's benefit, and doing it in a way that minimizes head cases, minimizes controversy, minimizes distractions, all that kind of stuff, and really channels it into what is the team there to do. And that's to win a football game and to do it as effectively as possible.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, the way I think about the Patriots as it relates to business around this is they have a handful of people who are among the best to play the role. Tom Brady certainly kind of being the kingpin of that. But there's a number of extremely talented men on that team. Julian Edelman, Dante Hightower, the McCourty twins.
Mm-hmm.
There's others, and I don't mean to exclude Gostkowski, who's currently on the injured reserve. And there's others. But like, these guys are among the top players in the league, but they're surrounded by a lot of players who nobody talks about as being the top 4, 5, 6, 10 people in the position. It's the whole, when put together,
right,
that carries the day. And I think the business relationship I think about, the business comparison to this that I think about when I think about effective teams I've been on, there's been a couple people that have been truly rock stars at what they do, who you knew, you looked at and you were like, man, that person is going to move quickly. They're going to do more than just this. And those folks were candid and blunt in some cases and outspoken in meetings, but at the end of the day, they came together as a team.
Mm-hmm.
I imagine that's what happens with the Patriots. You get all this individual talent, but Bill Belichick finds a way to meld them into a winning organization, and they do it over and over and over and over. That's how I think about that team of rock stars in the business world, where it doesn't matter if you got a couple outsized egos of people who are tremendous individuals in their own right. They have to be able to come together as the team, uh-huh, of rock stars in order to accomplish the thing that you're trying to do.
To the benefit of the team.
To the benefit of the team.
And with team support for that outside ego. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, they can talk all they want because they are super talented, but I got to tell you, when they come in the locker room, you know, there's none of that when we're out there conducting business. And I think that's huge, and certainly as a person who's been on teams in various capacities and still on teams in various capacities, I know personally that's what I'm looking for. I'm looking for the person that shows up for the team and isn't about the exclusion of somebody else within that team. It's really about, yeah, they might talk and bolster and, you know, have that outside ego, but really it's about the team, and you're there for the benefit of the team, and you're willing to bring other people along with you.
I know I was going through interviews at some point in my career, like 2003, 2004, about being promoted in the field at the organization that I was working at the time. And I was in a position where I was running a team of about 100 folks, 14-ish managers and a bunch of people under them that were non-exempt. And I had an opening. And this had come up in the interview, like, tell me about your team. Well, blah, 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 and I've got one opening. Or how many, like, somebody asked me, like, do you have any openings on your team today? Well, I have, you know, there's a couple of non-exempts, but there's a manager position at a location in Connecticut or wherever it was. And I go, oh, what are you looking for that job? I said, well, there's two things. The job is this, and so, you know, I need someone who can fulfill the requirements of the job. And I obviously would like to have somebody who can move ahead and do more in the organization, because we were growing like gangbusters and needed future talent. But I said, you know, the other thing I'm missing is I need somebody that has some like strong investigative experience, because we're kind of weak in that area. And I think that a good person in this role who has a good investigative background, another retailer, law enforcement, something that gave them some drive and some expertise, would be valuable to have on the team to help fill a gap in the team and help the peer group evolve. And so I think you're always, when you've got an opening, you're always thinking about that. I need to have somebody who can do the role, but I also need somebody that can, what's the contribution to the team? And of course there's cultural fitness too. And by cultural, I mean the culture of your team.
Right.
Like if your team is about, as I hope it is, cooperation and candid feedback and helping each other and holding each other accountable, the lone actor doesn't fit.
Right.
In that, you need someone who is willing to buy into that as the culture, or it's not going to work.
Right. It has almost nothing to do with any of the other external factors. It's really what is the team about, and how are they positioning themselves to work together, and do they all have an understanding of the common goal?
Right.
You know, if somebody's got a different goal, then we're here to, you know, minimize incidents, or we're here to successfully navigate the company through an issue, or we're trying to win a Super Bowl. If they're there for other reasons, they're more than likely going to stand out and not to the team's benefit.
Yeah, I mean, it's, again, so I think this goes back to the question of the broader team, that how do you build a team of rock stars? You know, part of it is finding the right rock star to fit the hole that you have on the team.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I think another example, and it was on my mind because there was a survey I took this morning for like Inc. magazine or something about small businesses. And it asked a question about, you know, is your small business digitally enabled? And I was like, well, first of all, whose isn't? In this day and age, but fine.
Right. Unless you're operating a small lumber company in the middle of Alaska.
Well, right. So I'm taking the survey, and it asked a couple questions about, you know, digital, is your business digital ready or whatever that was. And they never defined it, which that always frustrates me. But I was thinking about it in the context of, like, working here at BrightPath. If you can't work digitally here, you can't work here. That's how we collaborate, right?
Right.
We use Slack, not email, for 99.9% of our internal discussions. We collaborate and debate and discuss things on Slack. We use Basecamp for project management and for document collaboration and for a lot of other collaborative things, right down to like, hey, what swag should we order this year?
Right.
Or, hey, here's my conference. Here's my outline for the Secure 360 conference presentation. What do you think? And then just brace yourself for the impact that's about to happen.
Right.
But I was amused by that question. But I think it goes back to the part that we were just talking about in terms of hiring for the team, right? If I interviewed a candidate, and this did happen last year, I interviewed someone to work here, and they were like, well, I don't really do any of the online collaboration stuff. And I'm like, well, I'm not really sure. I mean, like, why not? Tell me why. Well, right. Face-to-face conversation, this and that, and the other thing. And I'm like, yeah, but we have clients that are not here.
Right.
They're not here in the Twin Cities, and we don't see them face-to-face all that often.
Can't fly just to have a 5-minute conversation.
Yeah, so I mean, that's our culture,
right?
That's how we have chosen to operate, and so anyone that we bring in to work here has got to buy into that culture. We have to understand that in the part of the interviews they have, or that's obviously willing to be open to it. But like, that's table stakes to be a part of the team here,
right?
I mean, that's how we work. You don't come in the office as often as Marie and I do, or others. And for a while, you didn't come here very often at all, but it didn't impact your work.
No. No, what? No. Maybe my sanity a little bit, but, you know.
Locked up at home with four kids.
Yeah. Not being able to be locked in my office and doing work by myself. But, yeah, I mean, that ability to kind of blend into what the culture is, what the part of that's the needs of the organization, you know, especially in our case, like that's, we have, to your point, clients all over the place. We're spread out around the Twin Cities. We have to be able to be nimble to make it work. I mean, to be able to just do the work. And that's just a part of our culture.
There's another aspect to all of this too, around, about the team collaboration portion of this. And that is, I think we should clarify that in none of this of what we're talking about, are we saying that there shouldn't be conflict and there shouldn't be disagreement?
No.
And there shouldn't be candid feedback or even people getting pissed off. I think those are all appropriate things for teams to go through. But when they're over, when you've made the decision as a group or the leader has decided what you're going to do, then that needs to be the end of that, and you move forward as a team until you've agreed to revisit the decision that's been made. I know when I was in my last organization, when I was in the field as a security leader, I was partnered with a business leader, and we were the only two people at that level in that group, and that was what. And we had an HR partner, I should clarify. So there were three of us, but we were it. Right, there was nobody at our level at that group level that was out in the field managing stuff. And I remember my boss pulled me aside one day, who was at a regional level, and he goes, hey, so, you know, there's some scuttlebutts rolling around that, you know, you guys don't have conflict, the three of you, right, that you just don't disagree. And I'm like,
okay, yeah. And the problem is, on and the one hand,
one, what's the problem? But not really, because I understood. I mean, they just thought that we weren't challenging each other. And I go, look, when we came together, because we'd opened this area together, the three of us. I said, look, when we started this thing a year ago, one of the things that we all talked about privately and agreed upon is that our disagreements would be between us, and that was it. Mm-hmm. And we would decide. And unless it violated, you know, I'm in a silo in terms of I'm a security leader and I don't report to the business leader, and the HR leader is in the HR org and does not report to the business leader. As long as the HR guy doesn't feel like we're being unethical from an HR standpoint and I'm not violating the things I'm supposed to be doing here in corporate security, it's his business. And if I'm following your strategies and we're not violating that, and we're following the HR strategies and we're not violating that, then that agreement, that disagreement that goes on happens between the three of us in private, and no one is going to see a crack in that leadership team because they can't. That's how we get everything done, because everyone sees us on the same page, and then nobody can place off of each other.
Right.
We're in agreement. And when we find things that happen and that happens, we talk about it in private. Because I did have a manager, one of the managers at one of our sites tried that, and that didn't go well for him.
No, and I don't want to say, you know, underlings are like kids, but, you know, there's a little bit of, you know, that agreement that, you know, even my wife and I have arrived at is...
we're in the same tribe.
Behind the scenes, it's united front, you know, and disagreements to the point where I think a couple of weeks ago we got into an argument and, you know, it was kind of a full family disagreement around like what was going on and frustrations were being shared. And, you know, my wife and I's volume level went up from when it normally does when we're talking about stuff to the point where, you know, the kids are coming up going, are you guys okay? Is something going to happen? Like, no, we just had a disagreement. Well, you guys never fight.
No. You just don't see it.
You just don't see it. When there's a disagreement, it's happening behind the scenes. And I think that's, but that blends into when you have a team of rock stars, it starts to mirror that family dynamic, that closeness where you have each other's back, but inside the walls, yeah, there's probably going to be a little bit of butting heads. There's going to be a little bit of frustration because you're trying to arrive at that common goal. But to anybody outside, it's going to look like a unified front that's moving, just humming, as I like to say. It's just humming.
Yeah. But to me, these are all elements of just building that team of rock stars, right?
Right.
You bring in the best possible individual talent that fits the culture of your team. You lead with unity. You have these courageous, candid conversations, and you come out of those discussions united about the direction that you're going to go. If you have all of those elements, in my mind, you've got a pretty good, then you've built a pretty good foundation for success. But not everybody's cut out for that. Not everyone is going to be willing to participate in the team that way.
What do you think the differences are? So, you know, we've talked a lot about kind of our team kind of as an organization, and that kind of mirrors into, you know, probably functional areas within organizations, a security team, something like that. Is there any differences or any unique pieces that you would call out from a cross-functional team? So not necessarily a team that's has the hierarchy structure, but really one that's brought together. And, you know, I'm going to play the obvious, but, you know, a crisis management team of some sort doesn't necessarily have to be that, but, you know, those cross-functional teams, what does that dynamic look like, and how can you build kind of a team of rock stars that way, particularly when you may not have control over who comes to the table?
I mean, that's a great question. I mean, I think you definitely need to find some ways to build that team collaboration. And, you know, I don't want to overuse the term muscle memory. We use it a lot, but I think there's something to be said about the muscle memory of collaborating in these cross-functional settings to achieve your objective of a crisis situation. And I think, too, my experience is that these kind of cross-functional teams start in a relatively low trust environment, not because teams don't trust each other, but the players probably are not used to interacting around this problem.
Well, and there's uncertainty probably around.
There's uncertainty.
What is this?
How is this going to work?
How much work do I have to do here? You know, I get the building's on fire, I'll chip in, but when it's not on fire, what am I doing?
Yeah, why am I here? And if it's a disruption or crisis where your function's not involved.
Right.
Well,
that's really hard.
What do I have to bring here? The chances are there probably is a lot for you to bring, but you need to be open to the idea that you've got something to bring to the table,
right,
for something that doesn't impact your area. But to get back to your original question, I think that when we've built crisis teams, cross-functional crisis management teams in organizations, I think that starts off as in a pretty low trust environment, simply because they've never interacted like this before. And they're trying to figure all this out, and what's their role, and who's in charge, and is that person in charge competent to be in charge? I mean, there's a whole lot of things that go on. I'm bringing bad memories back for Bray here. But so I think, you know, part of this is training the team and having, I think, just laying that issue on the table that, like this, you know, building collaboration across organizational silos like this is really hard. It's really hard. And be upfront about that and talk with them about how they problem solve today across organizations, and how does that work, and what kind of discussions would they have, And I think helping them understand that this is not an academic debating society, mm-hmm. right? We can talk about things for a while, but we need to do that before something bad happens.
Or
because then we need to make decisions.
Well, and recognizing this is the new norm. So regardless of where the culture was, what functions were doing what capabilities were doing what, if this is the kind of the new direction of the org or the new kind of capability that the organization is putting forth, this is where we're kind of starting from. Mm-hmm. So airing some of that stuff up front a little bit, but really kind of rallying everybody to say, you know, this is the new team, you know. I mean, to go back to the Patriots, but really kind of any professional team, it's a new team every year. Coaches change.
That's right.
Staff changes, front office changes, players change, you know, the whole nine yards, that it's a brand new team every year, and they have to kind of come together and kind of coalesce around a similar culture, or in some cases a completely different culture depending on the level of success they've been having. But that's a part of that. And it kind of bleeds into the mantra we were kind of talking about, you know, the New England Patriots famous saying is
do your job,
do your job. Doesn't always work in kind of organizational sense of just do your job. You know, it kind of comes across as just sit there and pump your workout and that's it. But I think when you get into these kind of cross-functional or just as kind of a more abstract mantra for the team of like, do your job, you know, that's be engaged, like show up, be prepared, be a part of it, jump in, disagree, agree, collaborate, you know, do your job, you know, and a lot of that is part of the job, you know, and that is a huge part of it. So it may not translate as direct as, you know, Bill Belichick can get away with. You know, he's quite the personality, but in terms of that group and that environment, being an individual walking into that group, knowing that, hey, it's a brand new team with brand new objectives, brand new values, we're aligning for the organization, regardless of kind of personalities, it's what I'm here to do. I'm here to show up to do that. And I think that goes a long way in building that culture too. If everybody's showing up with kind of positive intent and a willingness to collaborate and do those kind of things, you're probably more than halfway there.
Yeah. I mean, I couldn't agree more. I think you illustrate well there in what you talk through around, there is this element of you do need to do your job, and part of the job is you and your silo that you're bringing to the table in these cross-functional discussions. And part of the job is your ability to cut across the silo and be a part of a bigger team. I don't think it's any different than thinking about, you know, your role as a leader within your organization, in your day-to-day job, that you have a role. You have kind of three managerial roles, right? You're leading your function, your team that you're the leader of. You're a member of a team in that you have, unless you're the CEO, you have peers reporting to a boss. You and your peers are a team, and they have as much pull on your feedback and accountability and your accountability to them. And as a peer group, you're constantly managing the boundaries of what your role is vis-a-vis the roles of the other teams. And sometimes those change. Mm-hmm. And then you have a role to be a leader to your boss, in that you need to be able to give him feedback, him or her, just to be clear. You need to deliver that feedback upwards to your leader, and sometimes to your leader's leader, in a candid and forthright manner. And so I think it's similar to that. You know, when you bring yourself to the job, you're bringing yourself, you're bringing your various managerial roles, and you're bringing this kind of fit to the organization and what the organization needs. That's all part of being a leader, whether you're talking about leading your function, mm-hmm. or as we talked about in the latter half of the episode here, talking about, you know, what's your role on a cross-functional team? What's your role as a member or leader of a crisis management team? And I think all those things matter. And this isn't too far off of what, you know, this whole concept of meta leadership that the Harvard National Preparedness Leadership Program teaches.
Yeah.
That leading is about, leading in these very difficult critical moments is about five things. It's about yourself. It's about situational awareness. It's about running your silo. It's about leading upward. And what I think is probably the most important one, which is your ability to cut across the organization, lead horizontally across all these silos. And quite frankly, some folks can't do that. They can't see past their own nose, so to speak, to make that collaborative leadership and understand what another team is bringing to the table.
Well, I think that the one piece that you touched on is that situational awareness, which blends into that kind of self-awareness of you're recognizing who you are, what you're about, what you're capable of kind of melding into, and understanding what that culture of the team is, and being able to recognize, like, I'm going to have to do something different here, you know, because I want to be a part of this team, or this isn't a right fit, you know, and not in recognizing that. And that's okay, because what that team needs to happen, you know, and players leave the Patriots. They recognize, hey, this no longer is, you know, some cases might be about the, you know, bigger paycheck, but sometimes it's about, hey, I need a different cultural fit. This isn't what I thought it was going to be. And for other players is, I got to shut my mouth. When I show up to the Patriots, I got to shut my mouth, and I just have to do my work. Because if at the end of the day, my goal is to win a championship, to have success, you know, to get that ring, I got to shut my mouth. And I can't talk about how many yards I may or may not be getting, how many tackles I'm getting, how often I'm playing, how much I'm being utilized, all that kind of stuff, that you have to kind of accept that that's what you're stepping into. And I think that's a huge piece too, because, you know, as someone who would, you know, work as part of a team, having those people step in and go, yep, I'm here to do my work. How can I help you? Because we're all driving towards that same part, you know, same goal, which I think we kind of mentioned in beating a little bit, but I mean, it's a huge piece, is being willing to step into that cross-functional or, mm-hmm. you know, just a functional team.
Well, I think you bring up an interesting point about situational awareness in a way I hadn't thought about it. And that is, you know, there's a bigger picture to be seen in almost any circumstance. And we've talked about this a lot on the podcast when it comes to crisis management and crisis situations, that it's important to understand what's going on in front of you, but it's just as important for the crisis leader to see the broader picture of what's going on and see these other threats in motion around you and mm-hmm. understand what's going to influence or not influence the circumstance that you're in. I was thinking about this in a more related way. On Sunday, watching the Vikings and the Detroit Lions play, because they're on the Detroit Lions, is Danny Amendola, who was with the Dolphins last year and with the Patriots for many years prior to that. And Amendola left as a free agent because he got more money somewhere else, which was Miami. And then Miami released him. And the Lions, of course, the Lions coach is a former defensive coordinator for the Patriots. The Lions picked him up coming into last season, I think it was. Mm-hmm. But my point related to all this is, so herein lies the trade-off that you make to be a part of a team. Do you want more money? In this case, Amendola took the money to go to the Dolphins, more money than the Pats were going to pay him. And so he's made more money the last 3 years. No rings, and not a great experience in Miami for him because they were horrible. They've continued to be horrible, at least a little better in Detroit. So right. What's the trade-off? Do you want to remain as a part of a great team and have the chance to win, or do you want to take more money? Now, there's no guarantee the Pats were going to keep him anyway.
Right.
Right. I mean, nobody knows what those conversations were, but that's what it looked like. Like, I'm going to take more money, so I'm going here.
Right.
As opposed to staying here and potentially taking equal or less money, but getting two more Super Bowl rings.
Well, and that's part of the, you know, kind of self-awareness, situational awareness, and kind of understanding of the culture of the team is, I think most people on that Patriots team recognize if they're not doing their job or fitting to what is the established culture, they are no longer a part of that organization.
Mm-hmm.
And there will come a time where you will not be a part of that organization. And I think for right, wrong, people's, you know, personal, emotional opinion to it, you know, not to debate, you know, Belichick's philosophy, is walking into a team like that, you know, within any organization, understanding that, hey, if I don't, you know, this is a team, if you don't perform, you're out. If this is a team that they're always looking for kind of fresh ideas and new ideas, and most people stick around for 2, 3, maybe 4 years, and then they kind of move on. You know, this isn't a team of, you know, lifers, so to speak. You know, understanding that that's kind of what the team is, and your job is to show up for the amount of time that you're there and to do those things. Great. You know, but at a certain point, it may come a time to move on. And I think that's also something to kind of think about, and part of the challenge of maintaining that team of rock stars. So you might be able to kind of form a team right up front, or, you know, fall into or get yourself a team of rock stars. But at a certain point, transitions are coming, changes are coming, growth happens, sometimes shrinkage happens. You know, you have to be, the team has to be willing to flex and kind of evolve as it moves through.
So to summarize, hire the best possible talent you can get your hands on.
Agree.
That fit your culture.
Agree.
That fit your expectations for how the team should operate, and the let's call it the operating system, the platform of how your organization works.
Agree.
And as the leader, hold the team accountable to those expectations, not just their individual performance, but understanding that their interaction with the rest of the team and your leadership of that team is what makes the team great. That's it for this edition of the Managing Uncertainty Podcast. We'll be back next week with another new episode.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Managing Uncertainty, produced by the experts at BrightPath. To receive notifications of new episodes, join our newsletter at brightpath.com or subscribe to your favorite podcast player, such as iTunes or Google Play. Learn more about the services and trusted advice from BrightPath by visiting brightpath.com. That's BrightPath.com.